Today on The Independent, Tim Murray of VSiN joins Pete and me to talk about Notre Dame as they enter the first of two bye weeks after an eight-game start to the season. The Irish are 6-2, and Tim, Pete, and I will talk about what the future holds for this team in the eyes of Vegas. That and more on The Independent. Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. And today, Tim Murray joins the show. It's a bit of a mutual admiration society, as we've been frequent guests at odd hours of the night on Tim's show on VSiN. But Tim, I refer to you and like Ty Hildebrand, or what our previous guests, like sort of professional Notre Dame fans. So I think you speak for many. In terms of how you've processed the season. And I guess after eight games, did the bye come at a good time for you?
Yeah, they can't stress me out this weekend. You know, it's funny because, Pete, I had you on my podcast over the summer. And, man, after the Louisville game, I was so mad, as many Notre Dame fans were, and you're questioning, what is this program going to be? Is Freeman on the hot seat? Is Jared Parker going to get fired? Maybe he still should be. But I went back and I listened to our podcast that we did when I had you on to do the Notre Dame breakdown, and I predicted that they would lose to Louisville. Like, I'm like, they're going to lose to Louisville. They're going to go.
Like, why was I so mad about that? I was right.
It's so funny when, you know, you live in the fandom world, because I was like, this game comes at a horrible spot and they're going to lose to Louisville. Jeff Brohm, all of that. But as we got closer and closer to the game, I wasn't all that impressed by Louisville, and lo and behold, just the situational spot, of course, doomed them. Turnovers doomed them. But, you know, it's crazy to think, because I know as we get in the midst of it and we witness the Ohio State game unfold the way that it has, I think there's plenty of your listeners and your readers at your respective websites that are disappointed by Notre Dame to this point a little bit. You know, maybe they should be 7-1, and I've heard you guys both mention, Are they wasting Sam Hartman? My prediction was 9-3, and I thought they would be 6-2 with the bye. So I'm like, I'm kind of right where I thought I would be, but obviously a lot has transpired, ups and downs for where this Notre Dame team is at the bye point.
Yeah, Tim, there's a clip from our post Navy podcast that we tweet out where Pete said Sam Hartman makes Notre Dame upset proof against the likes of Louisville. And I said, well, he did lose to them last year, so I don't know if I go that far yet. Now, I didn't think he would lose to them this year. But I'm also in our season preview pod, I said they're going to go 9-3 and they'll win. They'll lose a game they shouldn't, and they'll win one of the big three. And I said USC would be that one. So as long as they just lose to Clemson and win out, I'm going to look like a genius here, even though this season has made no sense whatsoever. Personally, Tim, I think the bye for you could have come at a good time, right around 3-4 a.m. on the early morning hours of September 25th. We had a chatty car ride back after the Ohio State, which was also your birthday, which I didn't even realize until after. And it was a good party for you for 59 minutes and 56 seconds or so. I will say you were in a much better mood than I thought you would be. I threw out the tease on social media of maybe going live on Instagram, but halfway through my non-recorded conversation, I realized you weren't responding to me, and it's because you were asleep in my car before you awakened when we got back to Chicago. But how did you process that? Now that like we could speak and think clearly about it, how did you process that day from your seat? And I know we'll get into your personal streak here. That was a sore subject. But how'd you just process all of that through the eyes of a diehard Notre Dame fan?
It's so funny. I don't know. Like, what are the stages of, I'm not going to compare myself to, you know, it's like, was it grief and then acceptance?
We talked about
then,
that on our post Ohio State.
With Ty, yeah.
I mean, that's right. Yeah, I remember you hearing you and Ty talking about that. So, you know, immediately after, it was just kind of like just sadness. And I hadn't fully grasped the 10 men on the field, right? Because I'm in the stands. You guys are up in the press box. You're kind of getting all the angles. And I just kind of sat there. It was very reminiscent to the Notre Dame USC 05 game in the way that it ended, the way that I felt after it, the way that I felt, you know, 9 seconds before it ended, like, oh my God, this is going to happen, right? And I still remember, you know, when Notre Dame, we had incredible seats, best seats I've ever had at Notre Dame Stadium for the Ohio State game. I was like 10 rows up behind the Ohio State bench on the 35-ish yard line. So they get that stop on that jet sweep because Ohio State's really tough. And, you know, I'm thinking this game's over. And one of the Ohio State players is just looking up in the crowd and may or may not have put up a digit that is not we're number one. It may have been somewhere in the middle of his hand. And I'm thinking, they got him. Like, this is done. And obviously the rest is history. So how did I process the game? You know, I sat there. It's funny because I've covered plenty of games in, you know, different form and fashion. I kind of forget how long it takes to get out of there. So I'm just sitting there in the parking lot by myself. It's like midnight, 12:30. And I'm thinking, I probably should just move and go somewhere. So I ultimately went to the bar and met up with my brother-in-law. And we had a couple cocktails and might have had that little Five Guys that that Sam Hartman was Instagramming about a couple weeks ago. So, you know, it was not until like Sunday where it fully sank in, like, man, they had them. And then you start to see all the, you know, everything that kind of unfolded. And the more you think about some of the play calling there, I went back and watched, you know, the screenplay and you're like, oh my God. I mean, JTT is a stud, obviously, but like if it gets by him, that's going for maybe six, that's 40 yards at minimum. So it's one of those things. It's one of those big what ifs. But, you know, I texted you guys after the Duke game because let's be honest, you know, the Duke game ends so unexpectedly. And I'm like, I think it's fair that Notre Dame was 5-1 after Duke and Ohio State. So I'm like, I don't know. I kind of just chalked it up of college football's crazy. And at least Notre Dame got one of the wild finishes that they've been a part of.
Yeah. I thought that they played probably better than Ohio State.
Yep.
But Duke played better than Notre Dame.
I would say in the second half, because yeah. I thought that first half game plan, at least defensively, was absolutely phenomenal. And as we've kind of gone on this year, it's like, wow, Al Golden, you know, I mean, the ebbs and flows of everything, right? And I don't know if one of you guys said this, but it's like after the USC loss, everyone was ready to get rid of Al Golden. Is he the guy? And now he's like Saint Al Golden on the campus of Notre Dame after what we saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's been a wild season. I was interested. So before we talk about the USC game, I want to ask you about the USC line because you're a Vegas person. When that line came out and you texted me about it on Sunday at Notre Dame, I think opened at -2. And then I think maybe it went off at -3. Mm-hmm. I was very, very confused. And I think it was kind of one of those lines where it's processed quickly as like Vegas knows something we don't know. Clearly they did, but like, how did you've been around lines and when they come out and the emotional reaction to them and then they move, like, what did you make of that line when it came out on Sunday morning after Louisville, where you're watching Notre Dame play the worst game that they played all year by a wide margin?
I was ecstatic at that line. I was so happy because I'm thinking, okay, Notre Dame's going to win. Now, I'll be honest. I did not bet the game. Now, I don't bet a ton of Notre Dame games. I think this year I bet the under in the Duke game. I bet Central Michigan because I was like, Notre Dame can win this game and still not cover and I'll be happy. So I normally just kind of let Notre Dame be my true indulgence as a fanatical fan. As you guys can attest to the text messages frequently send you guys. But no, that line really got me excited. And then you start to hear, you know, from people that aren't gamblers who say, why is Notre Dame the favorite? They just got blown out. And I'm thinking, yes, like it did reemphasize where I was. And then, you know, I don't think he'll mind me ragging on him because I had him on my show last night. Friend of the podcast, Ty Hildenbrandt, went on this just, you know, almost crusade of how Notre Dame's going to get crushed and all of this. And I just texted him and I go, man, you made me like Notre Dame even more. And then when the game was over, I said, trust the market. So you're going to see situations like that. It's not always foolproof. There's nothing in gambling that is, but you know, I call it stinky lines, you know, fishy, however you want to define it. But when you look at a line, not always, but more often than not, and it's like that line seems too good to be true. You know, I tend to go the other way. Now, I'll say this. I thought a fishy line was Notre Dame, NC State. I was very nervous going into that spot. I thought NC State could win that game outright just based off of the market, right? Being 7, Notre Dame being a very public favorite, you know, and that's what made me nervous. And obviously Notre Dame was able to win that game and cover rather comfortably. So it's never, you know, foolproof, but I'll say this last thought here was, you know, prior to the USC game, we had a odds maker on VSiN Primetime. And I always like to ask them on Fridays, hey guys, you know, or this particular odds maker, Chuck Esposito from a spot here in Vegas. I said, what's shaping up to be the most lopsided ticket count? And what that means is who's getting, you know, may not be the money, but it might be more tickets. Your $20, $30 bets. Who's that shaping up to be? And he goes, it's shaping up to be Notre Dame against Louisville. And I was like, oh God, we're in trouble here. So yeah, it kind of flipped, right? Where yeah. Notre Dame was a little bit too short of a favorite at Louisville. And then they were still the favorite against USC. The betting public is very reactionary. What have you done for me lately? And that's more or less been my betting philosophy for a long, long time is, you know, just kind of playing the, you know, the economics 101, buy low, sell high. And, you know, for instance, you could clip this off. I might sound like a dope, but I love USC this week. I think they're bouncing back against Utah as a 7-point favorite, revenge on their mind, look like absolute garbage last week. So I tend to do that where I'll be on a team 1 week and then I'll fade them the other week. And another example, the Nard Dog last week, Pitt. I love Pitt in that spot. You had to, because that's what he does. He complains about random things. He loses games he's supposed to win, and then he wins games he's not supposed to win. And that was the classic Nard Dog spot last week for Pitt against Louisville.
The while we're on the subject, I just have to get this off and vent. I'll say this, I don't bet on games I cover. The only thing I would have absolutely recommended to anyone was that the under was going to hit in Ohio State Notre Dame. My weekend last week, and I don't like listening to people complain about their fantasy football team. You probably don't like listening to me complain about this, but I would have my own bad beat segment because I had Colorado on Friday. We all know how that went. Saturday, I had a four-teamer, hit the first three. The fourth was Boise State money line. They blew a 30-10 lead with 4 minutes left and lost on a Hail Mary. And then Sunday, I had Patriots plus three. And if you saw that, they were down two and got sacked for a safety on the last offensive play of the game. So the bye week is coming at a good time for me, in case anyone was wondering. I'm with you, though, on that, like, as far as reading the market. And you know, I'm on BetMGM's emails because I do work at Live on the Line. And you know, they're one of their sportsbook, you know, chairs last week had a quote in his email saying, it would be really nice for us sportsbooks if Notre Dame finally won a big game because the entire public's on USC this game after the way Notre Dame won or lost the week before at Louisville. And it ended up working out perfectly. I mean, how do you – I mean, you work in a sportsbook. VSiN is at Circa. How do you kind of read and react to the market, I guess, Monday through Friday when you see these lines move and when you see – you know, Circa's famous for not turning away big bettors. So I don't know if you'll see anything like that there. But how do you kind of process everything in real time before Saturday kicks off?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, there's no simple way to do it. You know, you can kind of, you know, Circa, as you mentioned, Matt, they're first to market. So, you know, I know you guys often retweet their openers, which comes out around 2 PM Eastern time on Sundays. And I am not like, so personally, bettors, there's so many different angles to do it. Like some people have their own betting system where they have their numbers and, you know, some of the professionals that I know, that's the way that they bet. I am more of a situational handicapper. But a lot of that has to do with, I watch everything, I listen to everything. And then, you know, let's see how this market's going to go. And it's not just a blind fade of the public, but it's kind of situational spots, knowing history of games and whatnot. Is there revenge? You know, how did these games did the previous week? Was there a field storming? So, you know, that team might be coming down a little bit. You know, I do a segment every Tuesday night on my show where I look at some letdown spots, and sometimes they're, you know, it doesn't work. And I always use a disclaimer. This isn't always going to be a situation, but yeah, for me personally, I kind of like to see, you could kind of read, okay, let's say Circa went down on Notre Dame USC to, you know, from 3 to 2.5. Well, then I look at other shops that, you know, might be able to grab, you know, a number there before the whole market kind of follows in suit. So, you know, that's certainly something that I look at. But yeah, I mean, I think most of us, especially you guys, you know, working in college football, and then your listeners following college football as much as they do, you can kind of tell who the public is going to load up on more often than not on a regular, you know, Saturday. You know, you see a perceived number under a touchdown. There's an old adage out there from an odds maker who once told me that if the number is 2.5, then the dog is probably the right side. And if the number's 3.5, the favorite is probably the right side. And I'll give you an example. Last year, Notre Dame played BYU in Las Vegas. Notre Dame was the favorite in that game, and BYU was ranked, and the number was 3.5. So a lot of people were like, oh, well, BYU could just lose by 3, and then I end up winning this bet. Yeah, that's true, but there's a reason that that number went through what is deemed a key number and has kind of hung out there. Now, once again, as I reiterate, nothing in gambling is ever this easy, but I always thought that was a simple example. And Pete, you actually came on my show and you said, Vegas is telling you Notre Dame's the right side, and you were right. And you know, that's kind of the way that sometimes you can read the market is, you know, how is this number moving? Is it going to go through a big key number, 3, 7, 10, 14, something like that?
All right. So what you're saying is gambling is easy. I just want to make sure that we're all clear on what
very
you're saying.
Very easy.
Very easy. Free money.
Iowa minus 3.5 against Minnesota this week. What could go wrong? Iowa.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on. We all want to bet the under on that just to say that we did. As Tim, as a fan of this season, like yeah. Matt and I talked about this a bunch in the preseason and a little bit like after the first couple games, the thing I felt most strongly about this team is that they were going to be wildly entertaining, not in a like as stressful as they proved to be, but as a fan, like, do you find yourself loving this team, loathing this team? Like how do you feel about, what is your relationship to Notre Dame football 2023, this team, this roster?
It's a really good question. And from a fan perspective, I try, midweeks are much better time to get me as opposed to Saturday in the war, because I'm going to be angry. And I vowed to myself week one that I wouldn't fire off angry tweets, and I haven't fully gotten there yet.
We just get angry texts.
A couple slip ups. Yeah. Once again, I apologize to you guys for giving me your cell phone numbers. I would say the first 4 weeks I was on cloud 9, and I know they had played, you know, tomato cans, but it was like, here we go. Notre Dame's got a quarterback and, you know, game on. I'll be honest, all in all, like what we kind of anticipated, I think the defensive line has been much better than I thought, which has been a very pleasant surprise. And I've been excited about that. Like I knew the corners would be good. I think they've been better than I expected. Love the linebacker play for the most part this year, even though, you know, you could, you know, pick some gripes here and there, but overall been really good. I think the thing that disappoints me right now as a Notre Dame fan is what's going on with the offense. And I think that's a, you know, pretty universal, right? I thought a wide receiver would emerge. No one really has. Obviously, I've been dealing with injuries. You know, I thought Estime would kind of continue what he had done the first handful of weeks. Teams have loaded up the box. And the offensive line has kind of been this roller coaster ride where they played. I was so excited, you know, coming out of the Ohio State game, even after the loss. I'm like, there we go. Yeah, there we go. They're going to grind some teams out. And I thought the Duke game was going to be, you know, easier. Obviously, it wasn't. So I think, you know, as a fan, look, I try to be as partial and realistic as possible. But like, I don't know, man. The Parker situation, I'm sure it's not all his fault. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. There's a lot of reasons why they're struggling. But it almost feels like, you know, where's the creativity like there was these early couple of weeks? And now I know it's on the wide receivers at times. You're dealing with injuries. So I'm kind of fascinated to see these last 4 weeks and if they can kind of get back to what we saw early on in the season. And you know, as long as they take care of Pitt, that Clemson game is going to be fascinating because I think Notre Dame's defense should really be firing in that spot, but man, Clemson's defense is the real deal. So, you know, that might be another, underlook there for Notre Dame, when they play Clemson in early November.
It's funny. Yeah. I mean, the defense, just to read off some stats at the first bye week, 16th nationally in scoring, giving up 16.4 points per game. Third in passing. When's the last time we could ever say that about Notre Dame secondary? Giving up 153.1 pass yards per game. 14th in total D, ninth in yards per play, 15th in takeaways with 13. I actually think special teams has not been bad. I mean, they're not blocking every kick like they did last year, but they don't win the Duke game without that fake punt call in the first quarter. And they had a big return that killed any chance USC had of getting some more momentum this past Saturday. And they were much better than USC in that phase of the game outside of the one Zachariah Branch
return. Yeah, the punt to Branch, I think, took a couple years off my life. I'm like, no, yeah, it's funny. And but I'll give you, you know, it's funny. I have YouTube TV, and I was texting back with a buddy of mine, and he texted me ball game, and I'm like, what is he talking about? And I look up, and it's the kickoff to Price, and I'm like, oh, he's gonna return this for a touchdown. Cool.
Yeah, been there. I have YouTube TV as well. But I mean, look, USC, one of those things you don't think about in real time, but you go back through the box score and rewatch it. I don't think USC had a kickoff that reached the end zone. Like, you talk about bad special teams play outside of that one guy. Like, that is a problem for those guys. And I don't, again, Notre Dame's kicking situation is what it is. It seems to have stabilized itself a little bit. By the way, we're seeing this on Thursday. Blake Groupie is turned into a star for the Saints. And they have a game tonight against the Jaguars. How about that?
And a former soccer player is a starter for the Dallas Cowboys.
Exactly. How do you process all that? And again, I'm curious, you know, Pete and I kind of being in the weeds, so to speak, as we are, we've made our thoughts on the search process that led to Jared Parker known. How do you process that from your seat in real time versus what's happening now? And I'm curious too, like, I would wager to bet, I don't say this in a condescending tone because it's not like I was overly familiar with the guy. I'd wager to bet 99% of the Notre Dame fan base had never heard the name Andy Ludwig before they showed him on the scoreboard at a hockey game and he turned into the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, how did you kind of process that versus what's happening now? And do you think they need to make a change there? And where do you think they should go next year?
Yeah, I'll start with the whole process. I mean, look, I was a Tommy Rees fan, big fan of Tommy Rees. And like, look, you can only do so much with Drew Pine and what they did. And obviously the Stanford game happened, the Marshall game all happened. Those were on his watch as an offensive coordinator. So it's not like he was perfect, but I was a big believer in Tommy Rees. And, you know, I felt like for the whole process, it was, you know, a learning experience for Freeman, for no doubt. But like when the biggest, baddest coach in the world comes to town with his chartered plane to take your offensive coordinator away, maybe you respond by not just looking down the hall and hiring the tight ends coach. You know, your guy just got poached by Alabama, who you want to be. And look, Alabama also took your prized recruit the previous cycle too, and Keon Keeley. So it's like you're getting punched by the bully. And your response really wasn't to punch back to someone that you can bully yourself, if that makes sense. Yeah, to the Andy Ludwig factor, I agree. I don't think anybody knew who he was, but then once you start to learn about him, the veteranness of him and the success that he had, you're like, okay, this makes sense. And then for it to fall apart in the fantastic fashion that it did, that's where I think it all, you know, S hit the fan. I'll be honest, as that unfolded, then when they went out and got Gino Gadulli, I was like, okay, this helps a little bit. You know, he's an offensive coordinator mind. He's going to be a quarterback coach. So I did like that. I like the fact, you know, you lose Harry Hiestand, which I didn't want to see happen, but you bring in Rudolph. And I was like, all right, this dude is, you know, Wisconsin makes a lot of sense here. First four games, I was like, yeah, this is great. He's calling a great game. Even the Ohio State game, I was not necessarily disappointed knowing how good Ohio State's defense is because I'm a huge Jim Knowles guy. But since then, it's really been like Elko, I felt like he pantsed him. Jeff Brohm, I felt like pantsed him. And yeah, last week, I don't know. I'll say this about last week because everyone keeps bringing up, well, you know, Notre Dame only had 250 yards. I'm like, they scored five times when they got the ball inside wherever. So I actually was okay. You got that deep shot to Chris Tyree, but I don't know, man. Like, I'm sure Marcus Freeman doesn't want to fire his buddy. But this is, you know, his livelihood could have been on the line if they had lost this past week to USC. So I think when he takes a step back, if there's a more obvious option out there, I think you really got to consider it because, you know, starting next year at Kyle Field, say what you will about Jimbo Fisher, there's going to be dudes everywhere on that Texas A&M roster. And who's your quarterback? Are you going back to the portal? Are you going to trust in, you know, one of the youngsters? I mean, it's not going to be CJ Carr, true freshman out of the gate, I wouldn't think. But next year, I think Saturday for sure, I think, bought Freeman some good grace here. And obviously they could lose to Clemson, and we're, I don't think we're back at where we were, but I don't know. As a fan, trying not to be overreactionary, I do kind of think a change needs to be made, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, at the end of the day too, guys, you got to get guys. Like, you got to get playmakers. You got to get special talents, and they don't have those guys out wide, which we all anticipated that to be the case. And, you know, it's just kind of been what we expected a little bit there.
Yeah, it's
Probably going to be against Mike Elko, by the way, in that opener. I will call that right now. I think he's the next Texas A&M head coach.
Ooh, I like that. Ooh. Okay. Well, that's not a good feeling, because Mike Elko was pretty darn good coach.
Maybe that means Ryan Leonard is looking for a change of scenery as well. So Notre Dame can be on top
for
of
Notre
that.
Dame or for A&M. I don't know.
Well, then Connor Wegman can come to Notre Dame. It's just a game of dominoes there, Matt.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Notre Dame enters the bye week fresh off a dominant win over rival USC. And there's never been a better time than now to gear up for the second half of the season with officially licensed Notre Dame apparel from Homefield. Homefield digs through the archives and history of the Irish to find unique logos, mascots, and moments to make thoughtful designs for your school. The Clashmore Mike t-shirt and the throwback Notre Dame tennis crew neck are an absolute must in the Fortuna household. Homefield's products are printed on high-quality garments with extreme comfort in mind. And the great news for our listeners is that first-time customers can get 10% off their first order using code INDEPENDENT23 at checkout. That's on all Notre Dame apparel. So don't miss out on the most sought-after Irish apparel available at homefieldapparel.com today.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit. The process was definitely off, but I'm with you. I felt like even though the process was bad, I thought the result was going to be good when the season started. And then after four games, you're like, okay, you know,
yeah.
it was a roundabout backwards way to get here, but they got to a good spot. I am going to be fascinated to see sort of how Freeman processes the season. It's a question that I like to ask him now, but he's not going to answer it in a sort of holistic way. But like, if you're Marcus Freeman, do you come out of the season more curious about why USC happened or why Louisville happened? And I think the answer has to be Louisville, but like the ability to recreate USC, especially after you did it against Clemson, just like what, like 10 games ago. That to me is fascinating too. Cause I think he's showing, I don't know if two games is a trend, but it does feel like to me, he's showing an ability to like get the team to rise to the occasion and then play even higher than that. And that is a different MO than Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I think I was just about to say that. I mean, it's you know, whatever side you are on the political stratosphere, right? There's always that, like, when a new party is elected, you'll see the bumper sticker of, like, you miss me yet? You know, whoever it is. And it's kind of like that with Brian Kelly. However, I do think that the two wins that Notre Dame had, Clemson last year and then USC last year, or this year, excuse me, you didn't really get those under BK. Now, I know the 49-14 game against Sam Darnold was magical, and that was awesome. But what BK obviously did was didn't lose the games that he was supposed to win. I mean, that streak of, you know, 30-plus games as a favorite, winning those was really remarkable, and I think underappreciated by the Notre Dame fan base as it was going on, because they couldn't get that big win. I think I don't want this to be a cop-out, but it feels like with Marcus Freeman, the ceiling is higher, but the floor is definitely lower. You know, BK was that once, you know, after 4-8, it was just status quo of 10 wins. And, you know, the Michigan game was incredibly disappointing in the rain there in Ann Arbor. But, you know, more often than not, I mean, they turned that thing around. Once they beat Virginia Tech, they just started crushing teams, you know, in a what felt like a ho-hum type of end of year in 2019. So BK did a great job at that. But, you know, for the most part, obviously the in-game situations are, you know, still work in progress. And I was texting with a former college coach during, I think it was the Louisville game. And he was like, man, it looks like Freeman has to take a poop. Like, he's like so tense on the sideline, like not Marcus Freeman anymore. And I felt like it almost felt like a massive weight was lifted off his shoulder on Saturday night, just with all those interceptions and him kind of getting back into his bag from the defensive side of the ball. But I mean, you guys hit on it. And I think this is what you get from hiring a coach with no coaching experience. The highs can be really high and the lows can be relatively low. And if they can weather this storm, I think that's where hopefully, you know, this, you know, university can thrive off of it. And, you know, maybe, you know, if they win out, I mean, this is a program that hasn't won a major bowl game in what, since the Cotton Bowl in January of 94. I mean, it's embarrassing how long it has been since Notre Dame has won a major bowl game.
I said this before Marcus Freeman coached the game, and to your point, I think that's why the 12-team playoff is just phenomenal for Notre Dame, because you don't have to be perfect, and Louisville can't happen. But, you know, you lose that Ohio State game the way you did, you rebound, you've shown you are capable of playing on the same field with one of the best teams in the country, and you get back in that mix as a top 12 team and you take your shot. One of the guys responsible for that 12-team playoff, Jack Swarbrick, was in the news this week. I'm not sure if you guys saw it. He was at one of the many NIL congressional hearings in D.C., and I'm going to read his quote here to Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports. He basically said it's time to open the doors for collective bargaining with student-athletes, but he said, and I quote, it will require a piece of legislation that recognizes the rights of students who are athletes who enter into binding agreements with something. There's a challenge here. Are they bargaining with the NCAA or the conference? It can't be school by school. You need some competitive equity. You can't have one group of student-athletes negotiate for a 10-game season, another 12-game season, end quote. And I say all that to say my eyes raised when I saw him say that, because that, like, opened the door. And I don't think I don't think there will be collective bargaining. I don't think there's any, you know, substantial path to that even being close to being a thing. But the athletic director of an independent program saying that certainly raised my eyebrows in the sense of, okay, so that's how Notre Dame joined the conference, or that's something new here. And I talked to a couple people around the ACC who had the exact same reaction. Like, wow, I can't believe he said that. Like, you know, we don't think it means anything for us. But yeah, I was just curious to get either of you guys' thoughts on your reactions to those comments and the age old conference question as it relates to Notre Dame and the future of college football.
There's part of me that thinks it's probably inevitable that Notre Dame has to join a conference. But you know, the 12-team playoff, I think, helps them not have to join a conference. It all comes down to the money, right? I mean, I think we've all kind of come to an agreement. Like, if the Big Ten has given out $150 million to all their institutions and Notre Dame's bringing in 75, it's just a simple math problem where you're like, well, now Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State have this USC, UCLA, all these schools have a massive leg up on us. So we probably should just go join a conference. But, you know, Pete, I think you've talked about this, Matt, too. If they can kind of keep it fair enough, close enough, now that the 12-team playoff is here, and I think it's, you know, they probably stay independent. I don't know at what point they'll have to be joining a conference. You know, I love that. I mean, your guys' mentions probably are even farther crazier than mine. It's like, just join a conference. Like, well, why? Why would they want to join a conference? Explain to me. They're the second most watched team on television this year behind Deion Sanders. You know, they're selling out games. You know, the reason they were four straight primetime games is because they're Notre Dame. You know, it's because
they're not, because
people want to watch them, right? You don't just put jabronis on in primetime on network television. So, you know, it's comical to me. Just join a conference. And then I laugh because, you know, I laugh at this because everybody wants Notre Dame to join a conference, but then everybody hates super conferences. So there's like this, like, you realize if Notre Dame goes to the Big Ten, the ACC is going to die. Like, it's gone. I am convinced of that. So I'm like, you can't have it both ways, people. So it's just, I find it so funny because it's like, I hate super conferences. I hate Notre Dame. I don't know what to do, because if Notre Dame goes to the Big Ten, then it's probably going to be super conferences.
Yeah, it's. I think this is a very good year for Notre Dame to have a very well-watched season, with the transition in athletic directors, the NBC contract sort of being open for negotiation because of the Big Ten. And like, if you're NBC, I realize that that deal was to help drive Peacock subscriptions. But I mean, you're looking at, all right, you're going to tell me we get Notre Dame, Ohio State, we get Notre Dame, USC. Next year, you get Notre Dame, USC again, potentially as a Big Ten game.
Yep.
If you're NBC, you're like, wait a minute, these are the most watched games that we have. It's, you know, you're drawing the third or second Big Ten game is almost never going to be as good as a Notre Dame broadcast. And that's like, oh, you just need the money to be independent. I mean, I wrote a huge thing about this summer, and Swarbrick said that it's about the money. Like, you have to, if you have a committed media partner, which means they're paying you, then you can stay independent. And considering I think it's lost on people, fans of, you know, programs that are in conferences, but like, have you seen like how people in conferences behave to one another? Like, why would you want to be in that room if you're Notre Dame, unless you absolutely had to? It's like, I feel like it's like five ships of fools just floating around college football. And like, you'd be like, Notre Dame, why don't you get on one of these ships? Like, heck no. Like, I just don't see the upside to it at all. Like, at all.
And I laugh at too, because, you know, once again, you get the folks be like, yeah, well, they should just join a conference. I'm like, well, NBC wants to pay them a lot of money. So in your normal live, what would you do? It's like, well, yeah. So I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at the schedule down the road, and Notre Dame, and I know they're back at the you know, bargaining table with NBC, but it's interesting to note they've got a home and home series with Purdue. They've got a home and home series with Indiana. They've got some interesting ones out there where it seems like NBC, I would guess, this is just a hunch, but I would think with their partners, they would have an agreement like, hey, can we get Notre Dame USC in LA? Can we get Notre Dame Indiana in Bloomington? So in theory, Notre Dame probably will have around 8 games on NBC every year. Because I kind of went through it. So I think that helps Notre Dame, I would think, back at the bargaining table for sure. Now that they're kind of in, you know, cahoots, so to speak, with the Big Ten when it comes, you know, to this media rights deal, which, like you said, I think, honestly, while they're undervalued right now, knowing that the SEC deal just happened, the Big Ten deal just happened, it almost feels perfect for Notre Dame to be like, here we are, look at our ratings, look at that money, give us a lot of it.
On the subject of NBC, Tim, the floor is yours. Your thoughts on the broadcast?
I would just like a little more juice. That's all I want, you know. Thinking back, I'll just two comparisons, okay? Gus Johnson, who we all know is the most over-the-top broadcaster. Some people love him. Some people hate him. I love him. I like excited broadcasters. I just, to me, the Jadarian Price kickoff return, just we could have used a little more juice, a little more just oomph on it. You know, and I know Jack's a young broadcaster. I mean, and this is nothing against Jack. I think the guy doing the radio call, who is an NBC employee, Paul Burmeister, who is also, I believe, a guest of this podcast,
this show.
I think he does a very good job calling a game. And I love, you know, Ryan Harris, who I've had on my shows, and I'm sure, and you've had him on your shows. I'm sure he would say he is a homer. That's fine. Isn't it Notre Dame football on NBC? I don't know. I just, am I crazy to put that out there? But just like a little more juice, a little more feel. I'm thinking back to like, and look, I think Tirico is the best broadcaster in sports. So to go from him to anybody else is unfair. But I just think back to the Kyren Williams touchdown run. What was that against UNC?
Yes.
In the COVID season.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, when year after COVID. And he just, way he called it, the juice that he had, and just the, he's gone. Like, it's just, it's so great. So, look, I don't know Jack Collinsworth personally. I wish all broadcasters the absolute best. And I just would like a little more juice out of my booth. And that includes the color analyst, too.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the Price kickoff return and Gus Johnson, because it immediately made me think of Chris Tyree's kickoff return against Wisconsin, which Gus Johnson did call and just lost his stuff. But I think fans love it, because
some people don't like that. I do. Like,
the announcer sort of meets the moment and is talking to the viewer who is not just tuning in, but like, oh, football is on. Like, talking to the viewer who's wearing Notre Dame stuff.
Like, Sean McDonough famously, right, lost his voice when Michigan State happened. Yeah. I personally think that's great. Yeah. Like, he's recognizing the moment. You can't go too over the top. And that's why these guys get paid a lot of money. And that's why these are the best of the best. And, you know, I'm also cool with like a rotation, right? Like, as a consumer of Notre Dame football, maybe I'm in the minority here. I don't necessarily need the same crew every game. Like, if you had, now that they're the Big Ten crew, and I didn't hear Noah Eagle and Blackledge called Notre Dame Ohio State because I was, you know, at the game. But I think Blackledge is really good. I think he's a really top-notch analyst. So I don't know. I could, rotation's fine, but I just felt like meeting the moment. It's a hard thing to do, but I think meeting the moment. I thought Gus Johnson on that touchdown kickoff return was excellent, losing his mind in the moment against Wisconsin.
It's funny. I mean, I look at a guy like Gus, and he got famous off March Madness. I think he's perfect for that, because most people are watching that. I've never heard of half the schools before, and they're all going crazy just like he is. I could see where maybe that wears in if you're watching him every single week for 3 or 4 hours at a time, and maybe the insider knowledge isn't there. But look, we're only hosting a podcast here. We're not calling games, but I think Dara Orlovsky is a much better broadcaster than he's an analyst. And conversely, I think Lewis Riddick's a much better analyst than he's a broadcaster. And I think there's a happy medium there with everyone. And I think NBC's still trying to see which pieces fit, which, again, was always going to be a struggle to replace Mike Tirico, who, I'm with you, I think he's the best of the best in the business right now.
When Mike Tirico was calling the games, coming off of Monday Night Football, you're like, how did this happen? Like, however long this is, you know, we'll take it. It's funny. I was fortunate enough to cover the 2018 Winter Olympics for Westwood One on the radio side. And I bumped into Mike Tirico just in passing. And he's like the nicest guy in the history of the world. And like, he saw us wearing an NBC jacket. So he like stopped and talked, and I'm like, hey, just curious. I think maybe he'd been doing Notre Dame for 1 or 2 years at that point. And I asked him about doing Notre Dame games. He's like, honestly, as a, you know, Syracuse grad, I didn't, and I don't know if he was blowing smoke, cause I told him I was a Notre Dame fan, but he was like, as a Syracuse grad, I didn't know what was going to be all about. I thought it was kind of overblown. And then he's like, then you call it, and it's just different. And, so you hear that from a lot of different people, you know, just the kind of the vibe there. So no, I love Tirico. But I'll be honest real quickly, you know, I know we're on a tangent here. My favorite analyst, I'm curious your guy. I loved Mike Mayock. I thought he was awesome.
Like if you tuned in Notre Dame football for the football, Mike Mayock was your guy. If you turned into Notre Dame football for Notre Dame, like the rest of campus, as I've waved my hand around, Mike Mayock was not your guy. And I think ultimately NBC decided like they wanted to cater to the people who were turning into Notre Dame football for Notre Dame, not the football necessarily.
I thought he was like, and I, you know, I work in the business, I guess when he was doing it, I might've been early in the business, but you learned something there. Yeah. I don't, you know, I thought he was awesome, but you know, I don't know if that'll happen again. When he got fired from the Raiders, I'm like, can he come back?
Yeah, he was excellent. So, all right. Well, as we sort of wind down here, what do you want to see from the next four games and two bye weeks? Like, what's Tim for Notre Dame football to satisfy Tim Murray's fan cravings here?
Yeah.
What's going to have to happen between now and Thanksgiving?
All right, two things. I'll give you my answer here in just a moment. But like the last time I joined your previous podcast, I've got a little exercise for you here to wrap it up. I just got my text from an odds maker. So I got what would be the spreads for the final four games of the year. And I got two bowl possibilities that I want to throw your way.
God. Yeah, we can't get out of here before discussing bowl possibilities, including one incredibly juicy one.
So as a Notre Dame fan, I think at this point, you know, making a New Year's Six bowl and ending the streak would be just incredible. Maybe not incredible. Incredible would have been 12-0. But at this point, beating Clemson on the road and going 10-2, like with this schedule, and as it's really been harder than anticipated, I think that would be quite the feather in the cap of Marcus Freeman. I think that alleviates any questions out there that he is. Is he the guy? Is he not the guy? Obviously, those will reemerge come 2024. But as a Notre Dame fan, I honestly would be okay. And I said this, I think last week I was doing a radio hit in South Bend. And I said, look, if they go 10-3 with a win over an SEC program in a New Year's Day Bowl, probably the ReliaQuest Bowl, which is formerly the Outback Bowl, I think that's fine. Like the preseason win total was 8.5. And I think there's going to be disappointment. But I think that's the floor for me is 9-3 with a bowl win in against a Power Five opponent. The ceiling right now, obviously, would be to win out and to win a New Year's Six and maybe against a really good team. I mean, the possibilities that are out there could be Alabama. It could be, you know, it could be a Pac-12 team. But getting to a New Year's Six right now, there's some work to be done, obviously, as you look at kind of the scenarios that are out there. But if I remember correctly, I don't know, maybe it was 2 years ago. Pete, you might know better than me, but 2 years ago, there was just a situation where like Virginia got the Orange Bowl and Notre Dame had beaten Virginia, but based off of the tie-ins, they were kind of pushed out essentially.
That was 2019.
And yeah. 19. Yeah.
That's a bad, every 3 years, the New Year's Six rotates around the playoff. And the rotation that is 19, 22, 25, I guess will change in 25. But, like, that's the bad rotation for Notre Dame. This year's rotation is a good one. There are at least four at-large bids up for grabs. So, all right, I want to know, would you rather, we'll play a game of would you rather here with a Notre Dame fan. Would you rather win the Cotton Bowl over Oregon, or would you rather win the ReliaQuest Bowl over LSU?
This is me. I think 100 times out of 100, I'm taking the Cotton Bowl over Oregon.
Okay.
That's a New Year's Six Bowl
game. I'm glad sanity prevailed on this podcast.
Look, my neighbor is an LSU alum, and he used to give me crap all the time about, he's like, I don't know about your coach. I don't know if he's the guy. And then then LSU took our coach, and I'm like, hey, how's that coach working out for you? So look, it would be fun, but no, there's no denying. Like if you go to the Cotton Bowl, beat Oregon, you go to the Peach Bowl and beat, as long as I would say flip a would you rather back to you guys.
Yeah.
What do you think? ReliaQuest Bowl over LSU or ending the New Year's Six streak against Tulane?
I think there's one. I think the question here is, would you rather make and lose a New Year's Six versus win a non-New Year's Six against LSU? I don't. And again, like, I'm not a fan. I'm not like, yeah, let's get Kelly. To me, you win a major bowl game, something you haven't done in 30 years.
I agree.
You take that 100 times out of 100.
I agree. I think
and,
it's
amazing. And by the way, you know, half of LSU is going to opt out of that game. And even if they lose, they're going to say, right. Well, we didn't have our
team.
Anyway.
Yeah, we didn't want that game and all that stuff. So, yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, making and a New Year's Six.
No, I think reunion with Bob Diaco is not enticing anybody here. Like, no takers.
Here's the question.
Well, Brian Polian could be the honorary captain for both teams.
Who's the defensive coordinator for Notre Dame in their bowl game?
Oh, I think it will still be Al Golden.
You think so?
I do.
If he leaves, it's for the NFL, and that won't be happening.
All right.
Yeah.
You don't think he leaves? Like, if Temple opened again, he doesn't go back and rekindle the fires at Temple?
No.
And there.
What about if Boston College opens? Does he get?
That would be like I would.
He'll get a look. I don't know.
Matt, you wrote a little bit about this week, right? Like, just sort of about what's out there and what could be out there, and you know how the industry has slowed down a little bit, and like almost to the point of like, if you're Syracuse or Boston College, you're going to make a move. Like, this is a good time to do it because it's a slow market, kind of a buyer's market for coaches. But I could see, you know, if either of those jobs open, then, you know, maybe Al Golden does make a move. I don't know.
But he seems to be, you know, from afar, right? He's incredibly well compensated, north of $2 million, I believe is what I heard, or what you guys have reported, maybe. I'm sure he's up there with the highest D coordinators. So as long as he's happy, he seems to be happy, right? I guess, look, if the NFL comes
everything
calling
for his jobs, yes.
I mean, that's the tricky part, right?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if the Bengal, Lou Anarumo gets a head coaching job, right, which he was up for, then I would think that the Bengals would probably come calling for him to be their DC.
Yeah, I think that was a real possibility. I think Cincinnati's head job last year was, you know, there was some talk there and some interest on Cincinnati's side there, the Bearcats, that is. You know, I think it comes down when you've had the career Al Golden has and you're in the seat he's in now. I've been told he loves it here. He loves working for Marcus. Obviously, the defense is playing really well for him. It comes down to a personal choice, right? Like, do you want it? I equate it almost like Brett Bielema. Like, yeah, he wanted to be a head coach again, and he's not chasing anything big, so he went back to his home state, and he's revitalized a very mediocre, if not bad, Big Ten program. Like, does Al Golden want to do that in the ACC? I don't know. I mean, I think BC and Syracuse are two of the toughest jobs in the Power Five, and I would not recommend those jobs to a lot of up-and-coming coaches. But, you know, if that's something he wants to do and he's not going to be a flight risk, the old Miami AD is now in charge of BC, Blake James. I suppose that's possible, but I think his next move is the NFL for a DC job. I really do.
All right, Tim, you had some bowl lines for us, I think, that we just sort of got off.
and second half lines, our final four lines.
I got.
We want to do on this podcast.
So I got the final four games. This is from my guy, Matoy Pearson, over at WinBet. I'll before we get to the games, I think these are more intriguing. So I've seen a couple projections, Notre Dame, LSU, and what was formerly the Outback Bowl. So this is based off of current power ratings. What do you think Notre Dame, LSU on a neutral would be?
LSU -3.
I was going to go LSU -1.5.
You guys split the difference. So his power rating would make Notre Dame a 2.2 underdog. So we'll round down. So Notre Dame 2-point underdog to LSU on a neutral. Also projections out there of Notre Dame Bama in a Peach Bowl. What do we think Notre Dame Alabama neutral would be?
-6. I was going to go Alabama 7.5.
This is going to shock you. Bama 2.5.
Whoa. The same as LSU, essentially.
Essentially. He has, so his difference in his power ratings right now, Notre Dame 2.2 against LSU. So I rounded down, and then Notre Dame 2.7. So, you know, kind of middle of the road there. Final four games as of right now, still things can change. This is just based off of power ratings. So, you know, there could be situational spots, but right now, what do you think the power rating of Notre Dame at home against Pitt would make that line. Remember, I believe the preseason number was like Notre Dame minus 13.
Seven and a half.
Oh, no,
against
I'm
Pitt?
Going against yeah, Pitt. I'm going 16 and a half.
21 and a half.
Whoa. Ooh. All right. I guess Pitt is the bet there for me.
I don't think it'll be that high, but
yeah. Bill Jurkovic catches the game winning touchdown as a tight end and spikes the football.
Is he going to write on is he gonna Instagram Jesus. This week or
not since Zach Frazier as a homecoming story? Even
all right, the other two I'll just say because they're boring. Wake is 21 and a half right now, Stanford 21 and a half right now. What do you so think?
Three 21 and a half point games
right wow. now. What are we yeah. looking at here? And then what do you think,
for the second half.
What do you think, based off of power rating, Notre Dame Clemson would be at Clemson?
This is at Clemson. Notre Dame minus one.
Yeah, I was going to go Notre Dame minus 1.5.
He has it Clemson minus 2.5. So he has, in his power ratings, he has Notre Dame just slightly ahead of Clemson. So like just a little bit. Based off home field.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here thinking, like, wait a minute, Notre Dame line is the same against Clemson, Alabama, and LSU. That doesn't make any sense, but it's
a home field. Yeah, so on a neutral, adjustment. Notre Dame, Clemson would essentially
they lost by two the last time they were there, so that they covered.
That is true.
Yeah. I feel like the Clemson game feels oddly more gettable than I was anticipating both before the season and after the Louisville game.
I think it's pretty. I don't know what you guys think, but I think a lot of it hinges on this weekend. If Clemson loses to Miami, like, where's the mindset? And, you know, Dabo had some weird quotes this week about, like, get on. What was, right. I forget what he was kind
of. Just this week?
Yeah. Lighting the bandwagon or with two.
It was, yeah. So it's like, there's weird vibes going on right now. Their offense ain't it. Their defense is good, but. I think a lot hinges on this weekend for both teams. I mean, not that Notre Dame plays Miami this year, but like, I think the loser of that game could go in a bit of a spiral after this weekend.
Well, and that one's what, 3.5, right? Or 2.5?
I think I saw Clemson minus 3 at Miami, but let's be honest. I mean, Miami fans only come out when they're undefeated playing Notre Dame. You know, it's like,
I mean, think about this real quickly.
I know we're kind of going way off the reservation here, but like the ACC had a decision to make. What's going to be on network television? Florida State Duke or Clemson Miami? And they picked Florida State Duke. Clemson Miami is primetime ACC network this week.
It makes sense. I mean, it's crazy to think about it. Might be an ACC title game preview.
I mean, you definitely put, I mean, Duke's a 16th ranked. I mean, Miami and Clemson aren't ranked.
Yeah.
Clemson's last game at Miami, I did not mean to bring this up in this context. I was going to say they haven't played there since 59-0. Al Golden got fired the next day for Miami. That's not why I'm bringing it up. I was just saying this has got to be for both Clemson at Miami. And Notre Dame at Clemson. Notre Dame has to have visited every single ACC opponent since then, right? Like, that's a long time for...
That was 2017, right?
15, Clemson.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, it has been a long... I'm just sort of running through...
No, Notre Dame, Miami. Oh, Notre Dame, Clemson.
Has been to every ACC school since Clemson in 2015.
I would assume. I mean, that's 8 years, and they played a handful of times... You know, they played 4 times since then, which is pretty crazy to think about because 2 of them were not regular season games as well. But it was a while. That hurricane, the whatever it was, you know, that helped them, I guess, in the playoff rankings that year. It was a while ago. It's just very strange. I mean, Miami and Dave Clawson's in his 10th year at Wake. He's never played Miami, by the way. Like, conference schedules, you got to love him.
Wow. Well, it just gets weirder moving forward, right?
So, yeah, why would you want to be a part of those conferences?
I mean, I remember that game day, right? Jim Cantore, I think, was a celebrity guest picker because they had I could be wrong.
Yeah, it was a weatherman. Yeah.
But all I remember is one of my best friends from college got married that day, and I still have not forgiven him for it. So, and I remember getting off like the shuttle bus, racing into my room to see the 2-point conversion failed, and just, you know,
Never had a chance.
Yeah, never.
Yeah, if you watch it from the beginning, you would have. Yeah, it would have been disappointing because they looked left for dead for about three quarters that night.
It's good times. This is the cathartic Notre Dame fan experience that only you, Tim, can bring to our listeners. So we appreciate it. Because
I got to figure out. I think
there's
got to
be like 27 people listening that were like, I too was at a wedding that weekend and rushed to my hotel room to watch.
October, man. I tell you what, I got married in June. I don't know about you guys, but
I got married. Well, I was unemployed when I proposed. So I figure if she says yes, I know I've got to keep her. And I figured, well, we'll go the cheap route in the fall, because if I am employed by then, that'll be a good problem to have. And it ended up being the day before the Wake Notre Dame game. And who texted me on the drive to the game that day? Dave Clawson saying, congratulations, heard the good news. And then we went away that week and we landed Saturday night. And I saw it was Miami 41, Notre Dame 8. And I thought, what the hell did I just miss? That was quite a week, both personally and professionally.
I was July 4th weekend because obviously Independence Day and all that. Like, I truly tried to tie in my wedding weekend to podcast. My professional life, because when you cover Notre Dame football, it is your life and everything just sort of rotates around it.
So I got two parting gifts here for you guys. So number one, I need your listeners to tell me where to go next year, which game. I've never been to USC, so I'm thinking, since I live in Vegas, to finally get Notre Dame USC. Even though they go to Kyle Field.
Nope. Oh, Tim, you got to go to USC LSU week one in Vegas so you can boo Brian Kelly. And then you can see USC.
No, that's a given. I'm just saying, like, I'm going to UNLV Colorado State this weekend. Like, I'm utilizing the bye week here. But I got to figure out where to go next year. But I don't know. I was going to do this off the air, but I think it's just funny because we've been going for a long time. So, Pete, I didn't know this. I found out from a friend of a friend that Matt was in the same fraternity as a buddy of mine that I grew up with. And this is the baseball from the no-hitter that I threw to his fraternity brother, Johnny Bean.
My pledge master, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Wow. A little fun.
I have nightmares about him.
Learning something new about my co-host here.
And where did he go to high school?
He went to Gonzaga, Caleb Williams. And Oli Fashanu, I believe, too, the left tackle.
That is correct. From Penn State.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting.
Cam Hart on one of the Notre Dame in-house podcasts said, going to Notre Dame was the second best decision of his life. Number one was going to Good Counsel, which is a private school in Maryland. So
yes. Yeah, I remember that.
It is the private schools in the Maryland area, man. It is it's a weird thing, man. Like, I was telling my wife about it. And Notre Dame gets a lot of them. Notre Dame gets a bunch of those guys over the years. You know, Cam Hart went to Notre Dame, Good Counsel. DJ Brown went to St. John's.
Sam Mustafer was Good Counsel.
Yep, Sam Mustafer was Good Counsel.
Yeah. I think that
Victor Abiyamiri and Ambrose Wooden were.
Victor Abiyamiri was Baltimore.
Yeah, was it the McDonald's?
Well, then you look at Jerry and Grant played hoops. He went to DeMatha. Yeah. Mike Bray obviously went to DeMatha.
We've reached the naming old guys portion of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've eventually probably should end this thing. I don't know.
Johnny was insufferable about Gonzaga when we were at Penn State 15, 20 years ago. I can only imagine what the Gonzaga alums are like that they have a Heisman winner now that they can call among their own.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Cam Hart got the last laugh against the Gonzaga alum there.
But all this degenerate random school talk, the elephant in the room, you're wearing a San Jose State polo. Are they firing Brent Brennan at the end of the year? And do you think they cover this week? Two separate questions.
I hope not. I love Brent Brennan. I've interviewed him a couple of times. He's awesome. He is a cool, chill dude. So I hope he's there for life. I don't know. I'll just say this as we get into the degenerate side of, I'll tell you, this is like who I really am. So I have a under 5.5 win total bet for Utah State. So I need the Spartans big this weekend. So come on. Come on, Spartans. Don't let me down. I'll just say this. When Utah State was at UConn and they blocked an extra point at the end of the game, I might have been the only person in the world like, oh, man, really could have made that extra point there. Would have got the overtime. So go San Jose State. We need you this weekend.
All right. Never has an episode of The Independent ended on Go San Jose State, but there's a first time for everything. So, Tim Murray, thanks for coming on. We enjoyed sort of a trip down your Notre Dame fan psychosis with this season and some look ahead spot to Notre Dame potentially in the Roll Quest Bowl against LSU, which I contend I think would be quite a moment for the Notre Dame fan base and maybe the LSU fan base as well. Who knows? It's hard to say. So
anyway. Notre Dame and LSU in random bowl games.
Is yeah, really.
Music City.
Les Miles, Ed O'Dron, and Brian Kelly, of course.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a good time. It's a good time. So we'll leave it there. Thanks for all the listeners. Enjoy your bye week. He's Tim Murray from Visa Network. You've been listening, as always, to Matt and Pete from the Inside Zone and The Athletic. Thanks for being with us. And enjoy your weekend off. We'll be back next week with our next episode of The Independent.